Mind before. He is the author of The ADHD Fraud, How Psychiatry Makes Patients Out of Normal Children. Dr. Bowman has been an adult and child neurologist in private practice for 35 years, making disease or no disease diagnosis daily. He has discovered and described real bona fide diseases. It is this particular medical and scientific background that has led him to view the epidemic of one particular disease, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, with increasing alarm. Dr. Bowman describes this himself, actually, by referring to psychiatry as they made a list of the most common symptoms of emotional discomfort of children, those which bother teachers and parents most, and in a stroke that could not be more devoid of science or Hippocratic motive, termed them a disease. Now, Diane Booth is here to share her story in reference to her son, Vincent Booth. In 2000, Diane Booth's 6-year-old son was diagnosed with ADHD by his teacher at Sunnyvale School District in California, and it was recommended that Vincent be put on Ritalin drugs. When Diane rejected this diagnosis and treatment, they called in Child Protective Services, pronounced her negligent by order of the juvenile court, and made Vincent a ward of the state of California. I would like to welcome you both to Sovereign Mind at this time. Thank you for being here, Dr. Bowman and Diane Booth. Hello.
Hello,
Thank
Sonia.
You for having us.
So good to be with you again.
Great. Believe me, there are so many questions. You answered a lot of questions the last time you were here, but there are still so many yet unanswered. Dr. Bowman, what I would like to do is have you summarize your introduction to Diane Booth's case, after which, Diane, I would like to have you pick up from where Dr. Bowman left off in telling the circumstances that led to the separation you have endured with your son, Vincent Booth. So, Dr. Bowman?
Well, it's my recollection that when Vincent was a mere 6 years of age, that he was suspected by his elementary school teachers of having behaviors suggestive of so-called attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And I believe that somehow mention of their suspicions was made known to Vincent's mother, to Diane. And I believe that Diane's commonsensical response was an inclination not to accept the diagnosis or the recommendation that came with it of putting Vincent on an amphetamine. I believe it was Ritalin. And I believe it was just a short few days or a week or two thereafter that Vincent was summarily removed from Diane's custody and was made a soon thereafter a ward of the court and was placed in a psychiatric hospital where psychiatric drugging was commenced regardless of what Diane, no longer his legal parent, felt her son needed. But it's been a long time since I've visited or revisited the details. I would like once again to hear Diane tell the story of her horrible experience and that of her sons at the hands of government, which should be our protectors, who we put in office to protect us. So, Diane, that helped me out.
Okay, it's been an eight-year nightmare for me, and it's still ongoing. I live in Canada, and there's a reason for that, but I'll start at the beginning. When my son was in kindergarten, the teacher called me into a conference and said that Vincent couldn't sit still and he wasn't behaving. And I thought, well, this is strange because he's very well behaved at home. I never had any trouble with him as far as behavior. He was a good little boy, very smart little boy. He was very articulate for his age. You know, he could carry on a conversation with an adult. You know, he's just a wonderful boy. He was my only child. I had him at the age of 40, so I was already a mature, responsible mother. You know, I had a nice home and a good job and everything. And the nightmare just happened. I told the teacher, no, I'm not going to put him on drugs because I don't believe in putting a six-year-old on drugs. And, you know, I had him looked over at by a doctor, and he said he was well-nourished, and there was nothing wrong except that he said he thinks he has ADHD. And so I just was suspicious of that, so I said no. Well, here's when the nightmare started. When I was at work one day, and my son was in daycare, a social worker came to the daycare facility and just took my son. And when I got home from work, there was a little card on my door from the police department, and it said, please call us regarding your son. Well, I freaked out, you know, thinking, oh, my God, what happened? You know, so immediately I called the police department, and they said they'd be right over. And then I hung up, and I called my mother, and, you know, I was freaking out because they wouldn't tell me over the phone what happened. Mm-hmm. Well, when I was still on the phone to my mother, they just came right through my door, not even knocking or anything. Mm-hmm. And it was just one cop, and he grabbed the phone away from me, and he knocked me down onto my kitchen table so hard that the table crashed. And he just totally brutalized me and put me in the police car. And by that time, there were like six cop cars around. It was insane. It was like something in a movie. I just couldn't believe it. And they threw me in jail, and they were going to charge me with, you know, all these, they were making up all these felonies, these insane felonies. It was crazy. But anyway, then they put my son in this institution called EMQ.
Diane, this is Dr. Bauman. What were some of the charges, do you recall?
Child endangerment was one of them. What was the other one? Oh, resisting arrest. I mean, he comes in my home, bangs me down on the table, doesn't even announce himself, didn't knock, and he's charging me with resisting arrest. But anyway, most of those charges got dropped down to misdemeanors, and as an aside, years later, Governor Schwarzenegger actually granted me clemency when he heard about my story. And when I took that information to the juvenile dependency court, the judge says, well, Governor Schwarzenegger has no jurisdiction in my courtroom. He was just a really arrogant SOB. But anyway, so I got to visit my son once a week in this institution, and it was a nightmare. And every time I went to see him, he had bruises all over him. He was on all kinds of drugs. It was just, oh, it was heart-wrenching. And my son kept begging me, Mommy, please take me home. Why do I have to be here? I don't want to be here. And so I couldn't take it anymore. And so one day I just, I had this plan. I went in to visit him. I left the car running outside the building. And I just picked him up, walked out the door, put him in my car, and we drove to Canada. And we got up here, and, you know, I weaned him off the drugs, and he got back to normal, and we were happy. We were living up here, had our own place, and everything was back to normal. And the next thing I know, I get stopped by the RCMP, and it seems like Judge Edwards had the FBI put a $500,000 reward for our capture. And so this is insane. They paid $500,000, and so the RCMP gave them my son, but they let me stay. I guess they didn't want to give another $500,000 for me. They only wanted my son. So I stayed and filed for refugee status, and I was up here, you know, fighting from up here. And a couple years later, I decided to turn myself in because I thought, well, maybe if I go down there and take care of all the charges and everything, they'll give me back my son. Boy, was that a mistake. I go down there, and I spent 4 months in prison hell. I can't even begin to describe the nightmare. And, of course, I got beat up. I got pulled out of the courtroom once by 10 sheriffs. They chained me to a chair for 6 hours and wouldn't let me go to the bathroom or have a drink of water. I witnessed, it was just a nightmare. That's a whole other show talking about the conditions.
Treatment.
In California. Oh, it's a nightmare. No, these people are not held accountable by anyone. They do whatever they want to do. They beat up people for fun, and they actually film it. I don't know what they do. Go home and watch it and have a party and watching it. I don't know. But it's the weirdest place, and I've been in there twice. So anyway, so I get out of jail. I finally get a hearing after 4 months because they kept, every time I went to court, they kept continuing the hearing. And, you know, I get up at 5 in the morning, go through the whole rigmarole, going on the prison bus with all the prisoners, and stay in a holding cell for all day long. I finally get to the hearing, and the judge would continue with it for another week. And this went on for 4 months before I finally got a hearing, and then I was released. And, oh, and by the way, they gave me an order, no bail, which meant I couldn't even, you know, get a bail bondsman to get me out until the hearing.
Unreal.
And I found out later they do this to all the parents. I'm not the only one. This happens to hundreds, literally hundreds of thousands of parents, but most of them you won't hear from because they're still either in jail or they put them in the psych ward or they're dead. I just managed to, you know, escape back to Canada. So when I got out, of course, they weren't going to give me my son back again, so I came back up to Canada, and I stayed up here a few more years, and then my judge had me deported. We got a new prime minister, and he was a crook himself. He's gone now. They had to impeach him. But anyway, I got deported to Hawaii. They put me on a plane.
What's Hawaii?
Yes, they put me on a plane with no, just the clothes on my back, no money, and they just dumped me off in Hawaii. And so I was homeless and penniless, and so I had to stay in a homeless shelter. And then, believe it or not, 4 months later, I got a job at the state legislature in Hawaii. And so I worked there, and I saved up money, and then I got another hearing about my son. So I thought, oh, wow, my nightmare's all over, you know. So I quit my job. I flew back there, got a hotel room, and guess what happened? They sent the cops to my hotel room door, and they arrested me and threw me back in jail and tortured me for another 4 months. So I came, after that, of course, I came back up to Canada, and now I will never step foot in the state of California as long as I live. But my son will be 18 in 3 years, so I'm hoping, you know, when he turns 18, and they will probably dump him on the street when the federal money stops flowing to them. And I just want to be alive and healthy and, you know, be here for him when he gets out. Because that's what they do to the foster kids. They use them for test, you know, lab tests. They test all these drugs on these foster kids. And, you know, they get federal money. And then when they're 18, they just dump them out on the street, and that's why you have all these homeless and drug addicts. You know, they don't just magically appear. Those are mostly former foster children. And then they have no skills, no education. They just dump them on the street. It's just a nightmare. I just talked to a lady last night who she found me over the Internet, and she's a soldier. She was fighting in Iraq, and she had a roundabout with CPS in California, and they took her kids, and now she had to go on leave from the military trying to fight to get her kids back. and she said that now they put slapped a restraining order, and she can't even see her kids.
And that is not this is. I mean, listening to this, this sounds like a movie. I mean, it sounds like this is not possible. But what I would like to find out is, how are teachers making diagnoses, although not medically qualified? And is there some sort of sham training which is being administered to them to render them qualified? Because it seems as if, I mean, it just seems as if it shouldn't be possible for a teacher to determine that your child has this.
They do it all the time.
Sure.
They don't need an excuse because they have no accountability to anyone.
Yeah, but they are in fact trained and are encouraged to be making these diagnoses. There was an amazing video production in 1995. Made by a professional by the name of John Merrow. His program is known as the Merrow Report, and the name of his video was ADHD, a dubious diagnosis, or ADD, a dubious diagnosis. And Mr. Merrow went into the U.S. Department of Education into the Office of Special Education, and there he found people from CHAD, which is Children and Adults with Attention Deficit Disorders, which is an organization created by, funded by the pharmaceutical industry specifically to push ADD, ADHD as diseases needing Ritalin and needing other of the amphetamines that are on the market, such as Dexedrine, Adderall, and so on. So he found within the U.S. Department of Education, he found workers from CHAD who can be thought of as an arm of the pharmaceutical industry in collaboration with members of the Department of Education, making instructional videos showing teachers how to make a diagnosis and how to coerce parents, calling them after hours, calling them at work, to coerce them to accept the lie that this is a disease for which their children needed to be on medication. After the Merrow report, the Office of Special Education ceased work on this collaborative video that they were going to put out to all of the schools of the country. But it hasn't stopped. It hasn't stopped CHAD, and it has not stopped the pharmaceutical industry from influencing the U.S. Department of Education. So for every child that's in a school who gets an ADHD diagnosis or an oppositional defiant diagnosis or conduct disorder, they are a special needs child, and the amount of money that flows into that school district is doubled or tripled. And so there's a profit motive built in at every turn. And behind it all is the U.S. is the pharmaceutical industry present in great numbers and strength in the Congress. I think there I saw 6 or 8 pharmaceutical industry lobbyists per congressperson. And so they donate plenty of money to our elected representatives and get these things declared diseases that are just total fabrications, and get more monies appropriated for quote the diagnosis and quote treatment of these totally fabricated disorders, diagnoses that they make the drugs for. And so it's Child Protective Services, Department of Child Family Services across the country is likewise under the sway of the pharmaceutical industry. The main social worker organization nationwide is on record as supporting the coercive application of prescribed antipsychotic drugs to foster children and to children all over the country. So the pharmaceutical industry has got all of the important pivotal players they've got
in
all
place.
In place and paid for.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. I recently a brief headed for the Supreme Court was sent to me, and you might wonder, I get emails all the time from parents in Diane's situation, parents in whom an ADHD diagnosis is almost always the first step of the way, and then if they resist in the least, as Diane had the good sense to do, Child Protective Services appears at their door, often with police, and they are hailed into court, and they are threatened with a felony child negligence for not putting their kid on this amphetamine, on Adderall or Dexedrine, I hear almost every week from a few parents who are facing that sort of coercion, and I've often wondered what the total numbers of parents and families being so treated across the country must be. I've got to think in my own mind that the number is in the tens of thousands, but I came across there was an interesting. I testified on this issue before the Georgia State Senate, and it was Senator Nancy Schaefer of Georgia that invited me to testify, and she told me at lunch that she had had a meeting with 38 families in her Senate district, all of whom had lost their children to Child Protective Services, given the charge against them of medical negligence for resisting diagnosis and treatment, as Diane did. And Nancy Schaefer is a name you should bear in mind, because she has been trying to author a bill that would give all parents faced with that charge their day in court, a fair court hearing in which they would have to be duly proven to be negligent, and not just declared negligent as is the way now.
Now, I want to go ahead,
yes,
Jeff,
go ahead.
For a moment.
No, go ahead, Sonia.
Well, what I wanted to ask you is this, because I know everyone is trying to figure out how this is happening, but under what authority does the system determine that they have the right to take control? In other words, are there specific laws in place that most are unaware of? Laws that allow this kind of enforcement? Are there contracts signed by us as parents which have given permission to all of this? Agreements or documents? Just things that we are unaware of. Because it seems to me that, yes, we know that the state, you know, is in charge, but have either of you discovered any loopholes, anything that really has given them permission without us realizing that we have kind of agreed to any of this?
No, I think it's just the courts are so corrupt down there. It's a joke. All of the judges know each other. I filed a lawsuit. I went all the way to the Supreme Court of California, and they all know each other. They're all, you know, golf buddies with my judge. They're all sit on the same committees, you know, and they all cover each other's backs. It's a joke, and everybody says that California is the worst state in the country, probably has the worst judicial system in the world. It has a reputation around the world. Matter of fact, everybody says, go to California, go, come on vacation, leave on probation. It's a joke, you know, but it's not a joke, really. It's the new Holocaust. It's happening in California.
Sonia, there is an amazing article that I just recently came across, entitled In the Best Interest of the Child by a journalist by the name of Betty, I think it's Freauf, and it appeared April 30th of 08 in newswithviews.com, newswithviews.com. Mm-hmm. Everybody interested in this subject should see this lengthy article. She gives the history in some detail of the Child Abuse Prevention and Treatment Act of 1974, which was the beginning of all of it. And that bill was authored by Walter Mondale, who I always admired until I learned this about him. And she said Senator Walter Mondale fathered the multi-billion dollar child protective industry in America. And she goes on to state, and she had another important article, by the way, which was July 26, 2007, I guess in the same news with views venue. And let me see, where did I have this here? Well, she just points out that the that Child Protective Services and the juvenile courts and are all part of a and psychiatry and the psychiatric drugging is all part of a for-profit racket, for-profit racketeering. And
they can also do a search on YouTube and just do a search on YouTube under CPS or foster care. You'll see, you'll see a whole slew of videos people made telling their story.
I think the latest, what caught my eye was the action taken by the Texas Department of Child Protective Services. I mean, one can think what they will of Mormons and specifically of that group in, I think it was El Dorado, Texas.
Right.
You know, they believe in plural marriage and so on, but they did not file specific charges against the adults involved who were apparently the offenders. Rather, they just marched in
and marched out
with 465 children before having so much as written a bill of charges against any of the adults. And the things that have come out about Child Protective Services in Texas, one striking figure, 73% of those who age out of foster care in Texas, 73% end up on the streets or in jail. So that they're certainly not being very well parented, one might say. Over 50% of children in Child Protective Services custody in Texas foster care are on psychiatric drugs. The figure today across the United States is 50% to 75%. In Massachusetts, it's two-thirds, 66% of all of these kids they're not a medical population. They don't, they're not a population of diabetics or a population of hypertensives or epileptics. they're kids who've been dealt a horrible hand. They don't have parents. They don't have adults in their lives to parent them, to constitute a family for them. They are just extraordinarily unfortunate. And yet, because they're helpless, the government marches in on behalf of for-profit psychiatric drugging and psychiatry, and starts poisoning them and calling it treatment.
Oh yeah, and
they're badly abused in those institutions too. They're sexually assaulted.
Exactly.
Oh, it's just it's horrible.
Yes,
and the ironic thing is that I live in a beautiful place here in Canada. I have a good job. I make good money. And it's just ridiculous that the taxpayers of California have to pay for my son being abused in one of their institutions when he doesn't even have any family there. You know, he doesn't belong in California. Why are they keeping my son in a state where he doesn't belong? My family lives in New York. I live in Canada. You would think the people of California would have something to say about that.
If they knew about it, if the majority knew about it. Now, what is interesting is when you said that the reward was, what was that, $500,000. So to spend $500,000 on one child, I think that should tell you then how much they are actually potentially getting then per each child, because $500,000... Exactly. You see where I'm going with this. $500,000was well worth it to them, because obviously they're making quite a bit more on that one child. Now,
he's a psychiatric patient in perpetuity. Learned enough about his medical records to know that he was on not just Ritalin, but several psychiatric drugs.
I was just about to mention
I wrote a letter to the state attorney general's office outlining why his treatment at the psychiatric facility there in San Jose constituted child abuse, and a copy went to the judge, Leonard Edwards, and I never got
a response.
In California, physicians are required to report physical abuse if they know of it, and I did so in good faith, and I never got acknowledgement of my report.
But Dr. Bowman, what is so amazing is how I cannot even conceive of myself, much less a 6-year-old child, taking that many different kinds of drugs and the nature of these antipsychotic drugs. I know I read a part of the letter, I think, that you sent, because I think you had included a part of that, and that it's potent brain poison is basically what it is. So how can a child's body withstand that? I mean, it has to be destroying not just the brain, but the body. That's a lot of poison.
It is. The latest of psychiatric epidemics, and I'm no longer an opponent just of ADHD. They've got new diagnoses of the day, or new diagnoses of the month or year, and it was childhood bipolar disorder that was thought not to exist in children as recently as the mid-90s, and then Dr. Joseph Biederman and Janet Wozniak at Harvard University began to beat the drum to inflate a balloon of a false diagnosis of pediatric bipolar disorder. And so I think it was between 1994 and 2003 that the diagnosis grew by 400%, and Today, it was non-existent in roughly in 1994. Today, there are between 1 and 2 million. So this is a new ADHD, and it's like ADHD. It's totally fraudulent. It's not a disease. You cannot find any chemical imbalance. You can't find a physical abnormality, one that could be biopsied or looked at under a microscope, like a pap smear in a woman. And they are giving drugs called antipsychotic drugs, things that were like Haldol and chlorpromazine or Thorazine of 10 to 20 years ago, and they've got a whole new bunch of them called atypicals, and these include Seroquel and Risperdal and Abilify and Geodon, and these are hideous poisons. Children and adults who go on these drugs start to have involuntary contortions of the body, involuntary contortions of the head, neck, face, tongue, involuntary hiccuping, involuntary coughing, involuntary repetitive eye closure. And frequently these will come on immediately after the drug is started, sometimes not until months later. And then finally, if they are late occurring, they are called tardive or late dyskinesias, and they may be lifelong and permanent. Mm. Now, kids 6, 8, 10 years of age are being put on these drugs. They get another side effect, which has them looking exactly like Parkinson's disease of 60 and 70 year old adults, but it's due to these drugs.
Well, it's overload. It's got to be overload on.
These are unnatural chemicals.
Yeah.
They don't belong in the body.
In the body,
introduced from without. They are drugs, and
absolutely
yes, and and these are the same drugs that are causing children on them to gain immense amounts of weight and to become diabetic and to have high levels of blood pressure, high levels of cholesterol and triglycerides. And kids, especially in psychiatric institutions, are dying, and they are being signed off by coroners and by medical examiners who are complicit. They're being signed off as with incomplete postmortems or incomplete autopsies as death of natural causes. But we are as bad as Ritalin and Adderall and Dexedrine, all of them being addictive amphetamines, as bad as they are, the antipsychotics now being used primarily where there is a label of bipolar disorder affixed to the child, are just hideous and are nearly unfit for human consumption. And once these kids are entirely normal at diagnosis, but pretty soon they've got permanent ghastly involuntary movements that mark them forever, lifelong, as a psychiatric patient.
These people should be charged with premeditated murder. That's exactly what it is. My child was the most beautiful, smart little boy, totally normal, and to do something like that to an innocent human being, these people, like I said, they should be charged with premeditated murder.
But, Diane, what was the last time that you were actually saw your son? And, you know, well, you told us how old he is.
The last time he was 7 years old here in Canada when they ripped him from my arms. So he was kicking and screaming, "Somebody help me. Mommy, please help me. Somebody help me." And he was screaming, and they took him away, and that was the last I saw of him. I get a picture of him once a year. I get
What year was that, Diane? What
yeah.
year did you last see him?
It was 2000. the year 2000. It was September 11th, 2000.
Yeah. Mm. People in the United States better wake up because this...
They better wake up because...
They can target your... they can target your nieces and nephews or your own children. You are not.
I'll tell you something else. The people in the military, they're starting to victimize guys and women in the military. And I'll tell you something right now. These people, military people, are getting together, and we're planning. If somebody doesn't do something, we're going to have to take over one way or another. And I don't care anymore. You know, I'm willing to die for this because this is the new Holocaust. People back in Germany denied it was going on. Nobody believed it was happening. Well, we're trying to tell you it's happening. It's happening in the state of California. And if people don't wake up, the rest of us around the world are going to take over. Because we've had enough. You cannot be killing little innocent children. You cannot be putting innocent mothers and fathers in jail and letting pedophiles out on the street. Something's got to happen. And if our legislators don't do something, then we're going to do something. We're going to take them all out. Because these guys in the military have all the weapons, all the tanks, and we're ready to go. I'm not kidding you. I can give you a website. I'm not going to give it over the radio, but we're getting together by the hundreds of thousands now, and not just people in the U.S., in Canada, in Europe, Germany. I talk to people that come over here from Russia. We have a lot of new immigrants from Russia, the Ukraine. They're all with us. You know, we're not going to let
this happen.
Well,
I think what's happening is that we have to recognize that this is global. I mean, we know it's happening here, but whatever happens here becomes a global situation.
Yeah.
So
this is being exported. I testified before a committee of the European Union in 2001. U.S. Psychiatry, our top psychiatrists are over there trying to indoctrinate and allow the same kind of coercive marketing in all of the European countries, in the U.K. and in Australia. I've just come across, this is a brief of a case that is going to the Supreme Court. It's about Child Protective Services. It reads, safety plans affect tens of thousands, and by safety plan is meant the Child Protective Service prescription, affect tens of thousands of families each year. Most of the plans are grounded in baseless accusations. Two-thirds of the 65,000 annual investigations in Illinois produce no evidence of child abuse or neglect. And just about all of these, Sonia and Diane, are based on a charge against parents of medical neglect because of a diagnosis and prescription launched in the public schools. So here, 65,000 annual investigations in the state of Illinois alone, finding no evidence of child abuse or neglect, and I can assure you that doesn't necessarily stop the investigation or stop the attempts to grab the child, to put the child in a psychiatric facility so that the state child protective care apparatus profits, including social workers, including judges in the lowest courts, including psychiatry, and most of all, including the pharmaceutical industry and Congress that are behind it all.
Yeah. Now, go ahead, Diane.
I was going to say another piece of logic that people can think about is, if I really was such a bad person and committed such a crime, why did they let me out of jail? You know, if I was that bad of a person, I'd still be in jail, right?
They're not interested in you, so
that it's not a real crime. It's just a bogus, it's a fraud to steal, kidnap people's children.
It's all about what Vincent is worth to them.
Absolutely.
He will have been 6 to 18. He will have and 12 years as a full-time psychiatric patient.
And they would have milked him.
Taking, who knows how many drugs.
Well, this is eugenics, all, I mean, which is what we spoke of the last time. I mean, when, you know, when you break all of this down, you, I mean, obviously, again, the only reason why a system would do anything like that is because there is no humanity involved. There is no concern for people as thinking, feeling human beings. And it just goes right back to that. So it is easy for them to do these kinds of things because it's not, they're not people that are really having any worth per se, according to their definition of worth.
Sonia, one last time, I'd just like to mention this article by Betty F. R. E. A. U. F. Best Interest of the Child, April 30th, 2008, newswithviews.com.
And yes, I looked
also,
that up.
Yeah, it's very powerful, and she had yet another article in 07 that was July 26, 2007, Betty
Froof. Yeah, I will definitely have that up and make that available on the website as well for people to go to. I want to also ask, now, are there more specific, are there areas that are more, would you say, prone to this sort of behavior taking place? Because there are people who have refused. But is it really, I mean, it has to take somebody to enforce this. So is it the teacher then who decides that I'm going to complain, I'm going to tell on you, because somebody has to pass it on. Somebody has to pass it on.
Yeah,
if
the teacher
doesn't pass it on,
the classroom teacher starts it, and then it becomes
a snowball.
And then it becomes the diagnostic team within the school, usually including a principal, associate principal, school psychologist, and so on. And so they sit down, four or five of them on the diagnostic team across the table from a single parent or a minority parent or parents. And clearly, those who are relatively powerless are disproportionately targeted, single parents, minorities,
Or people that have no family in the state,
and so on. This is it's very clear. They are much less likely to take on, say, the child to target the child of an attorney would be a force to reckon with, or the child of a physician, and so on. Not that they don't. They surely do, and they surely target children of divorce, where almost always they are exposed to psychologists and psychiatrists in the family courts, where they are trying to convince one parent or the other or both that the child's unhappiness, his depression, has nothing to do with the divorce, but is a disease per se, and so on. So it's really a Machiavellian evil business which flies in the face of our democratic ideals here, and it has gotten, and it's so far along that if people don't stand up and fight this thing back, we are not going to have any credibility in continuing to try to call this a democracy.
Now, on your
I hate to say it, but they already don't have any credibility in most countries.
Oh, absolutely. There was an email that I had received from you, Dr. Ballman, and, of course, in that email were, I don't know, two or three other emails. But this, I find this statement to be quite interesting, and it says that it was by a Dr. Jose Delgado, M.R. Delgado, Director of Neuropsychiatry, Yale University Medical School, and it says, we need a program of psychosurgery for political control of our society. The purpose is physical control of the mind. Everyone who deviates from the given norm can be surgically mutilated. The individual may think that the most important reality is his own existence, but this is not his personal point of view. This lacks historical perspective. And then there's another quote, man does not have the right to develop his own mind. This kind of liberal orientation has great appeal. We must electrically control the brain. Someday, armies and generals will be controlled by electrical stimulation of the brain. February 24th, 1974, Congressional Record Number 26, Volume 118. That is a little scary.
I thought that was going to be Hitler or Stalin that wrote that.
These are incredibly dangerous thoughts, and to think that these people are being utilized against the populace by people in government who want to have that kind of power over us. I just today wrote an op-ed piece. I haven't yet put it out, but it's about using deep brain electrical implants in the treatment of depression or depressive disorders, as if depression were a disease. It's not a disease. And the image of doing a brain operation for, quote, clinical depression or for obsessive compulsive disorder, it's such a powerful medical image that if you were to read about it, Sonia, or any lay person was to read about it, they would say, oh, those people wouldn't operate on someone with a normal brain. Depression must be a disease, or OCD must be a disease. And that's the only reason, the main reason, that sort of brain operation is being done on patients with depression, is to try to convey the big lie of psychiatry that psychiatric diagnoses like OCD, like bipolar, like ADHD, that these are real brain diseases. Then everybody will fall into line and will take their pills. They won't have the mistaken notion that willpower alone will allow them to prevail, or that personal strength or the strength of love of loved ones or adapting, learning, and sort of personally fighting your way out of depressions will suffice. They want you to feel this is a disease so they can control you, so they can put implants into your brain, so they can put drugs in your brain like antipsychotics, and they can control you.
Well, that's going to be the new thing. Yeah, and I'm glad that you brought that up about the implants, because that's going to be the takeover from the drugging. I think that's going to be minimized, and then the electrical impulses using brain implants, I think, are going to be the new way that they're going to, you know, from what I've seen and I've read. Another thing, because we have about 4 minutes left, I just wanted to ask you, Dr. Bowman, what is your take on the Wired for Quality Healthcare? Are you familiar with that? The giving of one's DNA?
Well, I'm very suspect because of all of these initiatives of government to control us and to take power over us. I would not submit, and I would urge all in my family not to submit. We can't trust our government with this sort of information. All of the fundamental rights that they are plundering and trying to take from us under the guise of the Patriot Act. This current administration in particular is to be viewed with the greatest
scrutiny
of caution.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the article I mentioned is in yesterday's, May 26, 2008, Las Vegas Sun. Scientists test brain pacemakers for depression, and I'll send that
Sonia,
with my comments.
Please do.
It's, again, it's all about psychiatry and in league with our government wanting to control us, wanting to take power. It's not just about profit. It's that's what fuels all of these initiatives and bills. Money's flowing directly into the Congress and the White House from the pharmaceutical industry and from psychiatry. Psychiatry is the pawn. They write the script for all of these things. But here we have it in yesterday's newspaper. Science tests brain pacemakers for depression, and they would have us, as you read this article, believe that depression is a brain disease, just like Parkinson's disease, which is a real disease for which brain implants have been used with some therapeutic effect. But wanting to use these same implants in emotional and psychological problems, not diseases, they aim only to control you and I, the first step of that control is to label us brain diseased.
Dr. Bowman, I once again, we are out of time, and of course, as always, I'm going to have you back again, but I'd like for you to give out your information, your contact information, and then, Diane, if there is contact information that you would like to give out, please do so as well. So Dr. Bowman and then Diane.
Yeah.
Okay.
Your website.
My website is ADHDfraud.com or ADHDfraud.org. My email address is fredbaumanmd@cox.net. My book is The ADHD Fraud. It can be ordered through www.trafford.com, also Amazon.com.
Great. And your information will be on my website as well.
Right.
And Diane?
My website is msnusers.com/freevincentbooth. That's MSN as in Microsoft Network, msnusers.com/freevincentbooth. And my email address is just dianebooth@gmail.com.
I'll be sure to have that information also available on the website. I want to thank both of you so much, Dr. Bowman and Diane Booth, for being my guest today, and thank you so much for your courage. As a mother, I cannot begin to imagine what you have gone through. Also, I would like to say briefly that today's program and all other Sovereign Mind programs are presented not with the intention of stimulating fear, but with the purpose of stirring others into becoming sovereign and aware of the manner in which we give our power away, not only to the system, but to others as well. Thank you again to the listening audience. You may email me at Sonia, B-A-R-R, S-O-N-I-A-B-A-R-R, @yahoo.com, and you may visit my website at www.sovereignmindradio.com. Join me next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, and remember that the power to be a sovereign mind, a free mind, lies within you. Join me.
Your name is Big Brother. You say that you're tired of me. Children are dying every day. My name is nobody, but I can't wait to see your face inside my soul. So I can't. So I can't. name is Big Brother.